This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. Department of Administration Secretary-designee Kathy Blumenfeld has been extraordinarily busy since she took the helm of the agency in January 2022. She recently led the state through its biennial budget process. She's been dealing with the state workforce shortage. She's in charge of the governor's clean energy plan, and she and her staff have been distributing an unprecedented amount of federal pandemic relief dollars. We're glad she took the time to join us today. Thank you, for Secretary Blumenfeld.
Thank you so much for having me here today.
So is the pace of the work what you expected when you accepted the job from Governor Evers?
I didn't really know what to expect. It was not when my former predecessor, Joel Brennan, left and the governor asked me to move over. I hadn't really had expectations for what it was like. But I love a fast-paced job, and I love to learn, and so this is feeding, you know, everything I like about the job. It is just truly an honor and a privilege to be in this position, and so I get up every morning energized, ready to come to work and try and help the people of Wisconsin.
Well, before you took your position in state government, you had spent almost 30 years in the private sector in the financial services industry. How do you use that experience in your day-to-day job?
I use it every day, and I'm grateful for that. I think everybody should be able to have an opportunity to work in the private sector and the public sector. I had so many unique and amazing experiences in my private sector work, working with financial institutions, insurance. I served on many boards during that time, and had lots of unique training that I am really excited to bring those concepts into state government and help share those with the people in my agencies and across the enterprise, quite frankly.
Is there anything about government work that you find a little frustrating that you wish you could change a little quicker?
Yeah, that's why I think it's so great for people to serve in government, whether you're working inside it or serving on a board. Because once you see and you understand why government works the way it does, you kind of understand things are maybe work a little bit slower because they're meant to be transparent. They're meant to have opportunities for the public to provide their input, where in the private sector, you can make decisions a little bit faster. So once you understand kind of the structure and the why behind it, it makes more sense.
Well, the Department of Administration is the HR manager for some, 34,000 state employees. We've all kind of changed the way we work during the or following the pandemic. How has state government work and employment changed since the pandemic?
Oh, it has changed so amazingly. So I think where I came from in the private sector, since 2012, I had been managing remote teams. So it wasn't something that was brand new to me. But what we saw in those first few months of the pandemic, what probably would have taken, you know, multiple years in order to get the technology in place and the policies and procedures in place to have a hybrid workforce. So those are some of the silver linings that we see out of the pandemic. But we have created opportunities for people to work in good paying state jobs from all over the state. So we have a program called Hire Anywhere in Wisconsin, where jobs that traditionally would have been just in Madison or Milwaukee now can be spread out over all 72 counties in the state. And that is transformational and really important to have some flexibility. Of course, not all jobs can be done remotely, but for those jobs that can be, we've been able to, from a talent attraction and retention standpoint, been able to attract and retain a whole new group of workers from across the state, and that's truly exciting and transformational.
You did take some tough questions from some legislators about work flexibilities.
Absolutely.
When you testified about the DOA budget earlier this year. They were concerned about accountability for a remote workforce. Do you think in the future that remote work should be expanded or scaled back? What should that look like in state government?
Yeah, you know, I talked to my colleagues across the country, and everybody is experiencing the same thing. So I think as we look at the, you know, younger generation coming up and entering the workforce and the 20s and 30s and 40-year-old, they expect some flexibility. So I think we have to learn. One, we've been able to implement a enterprise-wide performance management system where managers are able to set goals and work with their employees so that there is accountability for the work that they're doing. Also, as a supervisor or a manager, you have to learn a whole new skill set when you're managing a remote workforce. But it's absolutely doable. And I think remote hybrid work is here to stay. And we just have to get really good at working at it. So we're in the midst of this transformation right now of figuring out how to make it stick and make it work so that we can have a thriving workforce in the state of Wisconsin.
Well, as you know, I'm sure recently a large number of private sector employers like Amazon, Starbucks, Apple have been saying the era of, you know, unlimited remote work is gone, and they're requiring their employees to be back in the office for a certain number of days. They say physical presence in the office is absolutely essential. Do you agree with that?
I agree. I mean, I think collaboration in some respect, like we like to have collaboration days, and many of our people choose to be in the office 5 days a week. But for those that either live in a remote place, we want to have those collaboration days where you're physically together and working and solving problems together. But oftentimes, if you're just coming into the office to have a Zoom meeting with other people, it probably doesn't matter as much where you are. So the trick is really leveraging those opportunities to have that face-to-face discussion for times when there's collaborative problem-solving being done or innovation happening. So it's really just kind of a little bit of a change of mindset. And I think even with the groups that are bringing the businesses that are bringing their groups in, they're reimagining their space to have collaborative space. And that's really the crux of what's important. So I do believe some face-to-face is really essential. But I think there's a lot of work that can be done, and even done even better sometimes in remote environments, because there's often less distractions.
This June, the Wisconsin Policy Forum mm-hmm. issued a report saying that state turnover and vacancy rates in 2022 were at all-time highs. In the report, it says that we're showing this graph. The dark blue lines on the slide represent all turnover across state government positions from 2004 to 2022. The green shows retirements, and light blue shows non-retirement departures or people who left voluntarily. The report says in 2022, 16.4% of non-UW state employees left their jobs, including 10.2% who left for voluntary reasons other than retirement. It also says 5,770 full-time positions outside of the UW system were still vacant as of June of last year. Why are people leaving state government at that rate?
Well, I think the pandemic, quite frankly, was exhausting for many people, having to work, not only do their jobs, but then do all of the other duties that were required from the pandemic to make sure people were safe and got their checks and processes kept moving in state government. But also, wages were a big issue. There was a 19% gap between wages and inflation. So for many years, there were no increases in state government salaries or very, very modest ones. So we're grateful in this state budget that state employees will get a raise of 4% in the first year of the biennium and 2% in the second percent. I think that will help. I also think that having building the flexibility in, I think doing a great job of understanding the benefits package that come with state employees is really important. So this is going to take, it took time to create this, and it's going to take time to make sure that, these positions get filled. But we're already seeing a kind of a loosening. And as we've expanded to anywhere in Wisconsin, our pools of candidates have increased. And we're also getting creative. I sit on the Council for Veteran Employment, so looking at maybe non-traditional sources for employment, whether it's veterans, whether it's people that were justice involved, whether it's people that have disabilities or different abilities, really trying to leverage those people to come into the workforce. Because, you know, when you look at it and you zoom out and you look at it, we have the lowest unemployment rate we've ever had in the state, or very close to it. We have the highest workforce participation, and our state is in such great fiscal position. So we have the tools we need to attract and retain, and I think we're already starting to see that loosen up, and that's really exciting. Also, some of the add-ons that we were able to use during the pandemic with some of our American Rescue Fund plan and other discretionary sources, the legislature was able to continue those on. And so I think that will continue to help us.
Do you see that trend of turnover continuing, or you think it'll get better then?
I think it will get better. I'm really optimistic about that. And again, we're already sort of seeing the fruits of that happen.
What about diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives? I know that the Republican legislature removed a chief equity officer position that mm-hmm. you'd hoped would be placed at DOA. Are DEI supports an important part of your recruitment and retention efforts at DOA?
Absolutely.
In the state?
I mean, we want to be a destination place for people to come. And with that, we need to have a very inclusive and welcoming environment for all people, whether it's geographic diversity, different backgrounds. And so it's really important to have a focus on that, to make sure that we create that warm place where people have a sense of belonging, because that's where people want to come to work, and that's where they're going to stay working, because they feel seen, they feel included, and they can bring their whole person to work.
Your Vision 2030 plan includes an outline for modernizing the workforce in the coming years. How is DOA moving forward on the Vision 2030?
Yes, Vision 2030 is really exciting. It's kind of our North Star for where we want to go with our work, our workforce, and our workplace. So we're really excited as we have more hybrid work facility and we reimagine our space to create those collaborative opportunity spaces. We have underutilized space here in Madison, Milwaukee, and quite frankly around the state. So this was our opportunity to really look at what the future might hold. And a big piece of that is reducing our footprint here in Madison, changing it up in Milwaukee. And at the same time, we're looking at our spaces all over the state to see where we can bring agencies together, have hoteling space for those people that are working in other spots along the state. And it's really exciting. We have the opportunity to save over $500 million of dollars in deferred maintenance. So we will be looking to reduce three buildings right here in downtown Madison. And the community is really exciting, and developers are calling, and to be able to take that space, and we all know there's a shortage of affordable housing, we hope. We can't dictate what goes into those buildings or what gets developed.
What do you think might happen first? What might the public expect? Because I know there's some plans for that DHS building, which is kind of historic and iconic in downtown Madison, and the buildings where DPI and DWD and DNR are over in the Jeff buildings, right?
Yeah, so first we're working to consolidate, so kind of empty out Jeff 1 and Jeff 2, where a lot of those agencies are right now. And then eventually DHS, and we've got to ready the building that DHS folks will be moving into. So this is a multi-year plan, but we're really, really excited about it. And I think it's going to be great for the city. And also, I think employees are looking for a more modernized work experience. And then in Milwaukee, too, again, we looked at total cost of ownership of these buildings to make the decisions. And so we've been working with the local neighborhood where we already own property in Milwaukee to do a public-private partnership for our Milwaukee State Office building. And so the community said, hey, come here, we want you, but we don't want a building that's just going to sit empty every night and on the weekends. we want something that is more vibrant, that can be utilized, 24/7, but at least more than a typical state office building. And this is, has spawned a lot of excitement in the neighborhood. So we're trying to listen and learn as we go and make good decisions that are going to be good for the neighborhoods
as
well.
Goal for all of this is by 2030?
So that's our goal. So, okay. Yep.
Let's move on talking about this most recent state budget. The governor just signed this $99 billion state budget. We wanted to show a clip of you before that, kind of your hopes and dreams for the budget in your testimony before the Joint Finance Committee in March.
I kind of look at this budget as an and budget, right? That there's enough peanut butter to spread around the state. And so I think this is an excellent time to make historic investments, again, that will make and continue to have Wisconsin be that welcoming destination place for people to come to. People on the coast are looking for places to come. Let's invest in healthcare, workforce, childcare, transportation, housing security, you name it. And let's build communities all over the state and lift them up so we are that destination place.
You talk in that clip about wanting to make Wisconsin a destination place. Do you think the final budget accomplished that goal?
Yeah, I'm really excited. There are a lot of great things that happened in the budget. So I think that we are well on our way to make that destination, Wisconsin, a destination place. I think we have a little more work to do, but I am so proud of some of the items that are included in the budget. When you look at the investment, the $1 billion investment in schools, when you look at the investment in PFAS for our state, $500 million in affordable housing, the capstone of the whole budget was the shared revenue and really helping out local governments. Those are major, major accomplishments. And so I am very, very excited and very happy when we talk about the peanut butter spread.
Yes,
that kind of became like a funny joke during that hearing because everybody had a favorite peanut butter. And the truth is, I don't even like peanut butter, but I like to see it spread. And so I feel that we did collectively, the legislature, the governor, we did spread peanut butter around the state in a very, very good way. We still have somewhere around $4 billion left in our surplus. So I think there's still opportunity to move forward, whether it's on, tax relief, childcare, broadband. There are many, many, UW system, there are many, many ways in which we can still capitalize on what's there. And I feel like we kind of got a muscle exercised a little bit in the compromise, in the area of the spirit of compromise. We learned a little bit how to move that farther.
So and what was your biggest disappointment in the budget then?
The biggest disappointment, I think that childcare, probably. I think that we are on a childcare cliff right now in our state. And when I think about the barriers to, workforce employment, I see childcare as one of those biggest barriers right now because people can't afford to pay for childcare and come to work. Or if they do come to work, they're worried about where their child is. And that shouldn't be. In this day and age, as a mother of three, I know what it's like when you're at work and your children are at childcare and you worry about them. And so I was fortunate to have access to quality and affordable childcare, but not everybody does in our state. And there are deserts in our state where people don't have access.
That's how you want that remaining $4 billion to be spent?
That's a part of it. I think there's opportunity for tax relief. Paid family leave would be really important in terms of making Wisconsin a destination place to live, work, play, visit. I think all those things add up. Broadband, continuing to make sure. I look at broadband like oxygen, right? Everybody needs it to be able to thrive. And so there's a lot of places left where I think there's opportunity to work. And so I'm hopeful that this muscle that we started to flex, we continue to exercise that so it gets stronger and stronger and we can continue to do more good. I had also hoped a little bit that we would pay off more of our debt. We had proposed to spend $1.9 billion in terms of our capital budget to pay down and not encumber future generations because we do have this one-time investment. So I think, again, there's a multitude of opportunity, a lot of good ideas. There's a lot of dialogue.
The work's not done.
Right. Very good.
Well, we mentioned at the top of the show, one big work on your plate is the administration of these federal COVID relief dollars and putting grants out across the state. I know you've been traveling across the state talking to grantees. Which of the investments that you've witnessed do you think has made the most difference?
So I'll go two paths. One on the small business side. Wisconsin is one of the leaders in maybe the number one of state that invested in small businesses. So 9,600 businesses across the state in all 72 counties receive grants. And I have gone from Main Street to Main Street to Main Street across the state and talked to these business owners. And honestly, I asked them about their story. And oftentimes it's in tears of talking about their dreams and aspirations, how they've always wanted to start a business. And these grants help them like get over that threshold. And to see them in their businesses and their shops and stores and services and just thriving and feeling so great and learning all these skills and to be able to do it in a supported way. Main Streets all across our state have really been kind of rebooted and kind of a Main Street 2.0. And then to see the collaboration between the store owners and cross-selling each other's items and working together, it has just been nothing short of miraculous to see. So in that standpoint, that has been wonderful. Also on the tourism side, the neighborhood investment, to see affordable housing, to see healthcare clinics all over the state.
EMS.
Yes, fire and safety. I've been at a few groundbreakings recently in rural areas and having new fire stations, new equipment, new trucks. It's just been wonderful. And the whole community comes out to support it because they know how important these investments are.
I know the governor had included in his budget the continuation of some of these grants and programs. For instance, I think it included $50 million to continue that Main Street bounce back. But the Republican legislature left that out. They said that the pandemic is over, that we shouldn't be using this money anymore. Why is that still needed? Why should it be continued?
Right. I mean, I think part of this was to see the innovation that happened. We had the workforce investment grants where some of the communities came together to solve their specific needs in relation to workforce, whether it was housing, childcare. These dollars and seeing the projects that we funded, if we could take the best of the best and share them across the state, because so much innovation happened, that's what we wanted to do. That's why we wanted to continue these investments. One, we had the money, this historic one-time investment, and this innovation that took place, we should be sharing and replicating those best practices across the state. So that's personally what I would love to see happen in the future.
The Legislative Audit Committee had been asking some questions about DOA's decision-making process for these grants, the transparency around decision-making. Do you think you've answered all their questions?
Absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, the governor had sole authority to move these funds into areas that he chose to do. And we complied with whenever funding comes from the federal government, it comes with transparency and reporting. And we even on our own stood up our own website, which won 3 awards across the country for transparency and clarity. So we complied with everything that was in their request. I'm a former auditor, so I appreciate the Audit Bureau coming in, and we've complied with everything they've asked us for, and I believe wholeheartedly we have been very transparent.
You are in charge of administering the governor's clean energy plan.
Yes.
What sort of progress is being made there?
So we're really excited. So as federal funds, again, come into the state, We want to make sure.
Are those infrastructure funds?
Infrastructure funds. We want to make sure that we are capitalizing on them. And it's really easy for groups to go off in different areas and all do the same thing. So we're really trying to take a coordinated approach and working with utilities and stakeholders and businesses and citizens to come together to find the highest and best use for these dollars. So the governor created the Green Ribbon Commission, and that
they're meeting for the second time this Friday.
Yeah, so we're really excited about that. And that can be a coordinating place, a central place for some of the key decisions that are being made. But again, whether it's green infrastructure, alternative energy sources, green jobs, there are going to be a lot of opportunities to skill people up for green jobs in the future. And so we're really excited to kind of have a hub for that activity.
We've covered a lot of DOA's work. Are there any other priorities that you have in the coming year for the remainder of your term?
Yeah, I mean, prudent financial management. Being a CPA, former CPA, I look at the state of our financial situation, and I think about it every day and every night, and want to make sure that we are making prudent financial decisions. Continuing our workforce modernization is a big priority, and making sure everything goes right and we innovate along the way. Cybersecurity is something, having kind of the state's computer systems at DOA, making sure that we do that. And really the health and welfare of every citizen in the state of Wisconsin. Somehow DOA, they call it the Department of All, and it's because we touch just about everything in the state. And so making sure that, again, we're doing the right thing for all people in Wisconsin. And it is, again, such an honor and a privilege to be in this role. And I just want to bring that energy and great people to the state so that we can make sure that Wisconsin is the best place in the country to live.
Final question for you. I know you're a featured speaker at an upcoming Wisconsin Women in Government event, and women leadership has been important to you mm-hmm. throughout your career. What is your advice to women leaders?
So I'd say continue to be curious, continue to learn. Raise your hand for those not-so-fun volunteer opportunities, because that's where you learn the most.
Spoken from experience.
Yeah, there you go. But everything has a learning opportunity. Build your network. Make sure that you have mentors. You create your own board of director for advice. And you have champions within your organization that are going to advocate for you even when you're not in the room.
All right. Thank you so much, Secretary Designee Blumenfeld, for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me today.
And thank you to the viewers of Newsmakers. Be sure to tune in again as we highlight the issues and sit down with the decision makers who make a difference for all of us.
This program is a production of Wisconsin Eye, an independent, nonpartisan, nonprofit media network with a mission to inform, educate, and engage the citizens of Wisconsin. Wisconsin Eye is the nation's first and only independently funded state civics broadcast network, providing gavel-to-gavel access to government proceedings and events at the state capitol.